be, you know, thinking of that. But the average counselor might not.
And other things like, you know, if we bought a printer for somebody for whatever reason, and it runs out of ink, well, they're probably going to need to be responsible for buying more ink for it.
Right.
And like any of the services we provide, it's going to depend on the circumstances. You know, it's certainly conceivable that we may have a client who, when they run out of ink, cannot buy ink, but we can't say, well, sorry, you ran out of ink, so now I guess that equipment we bought for you is useless. You know, obviously we've got to provide them some ink if they're not, they don't have the means to get that themselves.
Right.
But certainly, you know, it needs to be communicated clearly, I think, what the expectations are. And that's something that I don't think we have done very well in the past, and I think we're doing a better job of now and can probably even improve on more.
Well, and I think you're starting to get into some areas that are really setting up some flags for me as far as what, you know, to not have financial participation be a part of it. I mean, now I think everybody that goes to college, every kid, the vast majority of them are getting computers of some sort. They're just doing that. And, you know, now the adaptive technology, of course, screen readers and things, that's something extra, and then that's a different case. But but it seems to me there has to be financial participation in some of the basic, you know, I mean, we don't obviously don't buy pencils and pens for people and a, you know, computer. If someone truly doesn't have any resources, well, that's a point that needs to be taken into consideration. But for, you know, that goes back to financial participation needs to be a component of doing some of these technology items. And Pearl, so you said you kind of have a question in, and so do you think you haven't been able to touch base with them, but is this the kind of question that they're going to be able to answer right away, or is this going to take
I think they should be able to.
I mean, would you guess right now, I mean, like when kids go to college and we're paying for their education, I would certainly think that most of them are going to need a computer and screen reader. Is that customarily, routinely being purchased for them now?
I wouldn't say it's routinely being purchased. And it really depends on the situation, but sometimes if there's already a computer in the home, if they're living at home while they're going to school, we'll take care of getting the adaptive technology for them to put on their existing computer, some of those things. I think when I first started, I was kind of told that well, if somebody's going into the computer field,
right,
we'll buy them a computer. Well, that sounded like a reasonable way to approach it, but really, somebody who's going into the field of computers doesn't really have somebody who isn't going into the field of computers probably has an equal amount of need for having a computer at their disposal in their home or in a lab that they can get to on a regular basis or something. So, I mean, the need for a PC that you can work on while you're in college isn't necessarily tremendously greater just because you happen to go into the field of technology.
You know, the other piece of it that we haven't addressed at all is the transition program. And the transition program, at least in its first year, had quite a bit of funds available to purchase technology for students going into college. And then these next 4 years, there is some money in that area, not as much as the first year. But actually the transition coordinator, Karen Mosier, and one of the transition counselors, Amy Burrish, went to the Closing the Gap conference that Jonathan mentioned. So technology is definitely a component of that transition grant.
Okay. But like you said, after the first year, then it seems to me you can draw the line pretty easily, you know, what's adaptive and what's off the shelf. You know, everybody going to college, I can't imagine there's too awfully many students anymore that don't have their own computer, since the costs have come down so dramatically over the years, and that to look at the financial participation for those kinds of things specifically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering too if there was something that would be helpful from your position, Jonathan, for us to do in the way of making decisions about these things. Are there any recommendations that you have for us as far as what you would like policies to be.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer for that or not right now. You know, as far as the decision making process of who is going to get what, from the standpoint of the technology specialist and myself, we generally don't make those decisions or are not really real involved in those decisions. We're kind of more the person that fills the order once the counselor says this is what this person needs. Or maybe not specifically this is what they need, but they need a computer, so help us figure out what to get for them, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that maybe, I mean, it needs to be worked out not just with the technology staff, but actually as a whole. I mean, there needs to be some sort of, I don't know, guidelines or something that we use. But it's hard to do that because none of our clients fit into the same mold. They're all pretty unique.
And, right, and every employment situation is different.
Every employment situation is unique. And so it makes it tricky to have any sort of policy, but yet you've got to not just go about things haphazardly either. So.
And we want to use our limited resources to get the most bang. And
that's right. You don't want to get into the routine of, you know, let's just throw out a scenario that when somebody gets employed, we buy them, you know, we have a standard $5,000 equipment, we buy it, and we get into the routine of doing that, and all of a sudden we have somebody hired by, I don't know, some major company, and we just automatically hand them $5,000 worth of stuff. Well, that would not be a wise use of our resources. Yeah. Certainly that company was well within the means and probably very willing to provide that equipment. So you need to have reasons for doing what you do, not just, this is the way we do it. And so, so sometimes having everything be individualized by case is good. Sometimes it can make things a little tricky at times. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention a couple of things, especially the situation Bill brought up, but I mean, that's the quintessential, but there are others that are along that line that maybe didn't get quite as involved. But definitely what the staff do is above and beyond what might be considered normal rehab. And I was sitting here thinking this is not your father's voc rehab. But you know, the kind of the research and development process is something that our tech staff and all of the staff really just jump in and, you know, try to figure out if there's something that could be made to make this work. And I really commend them for that. And the other thing I want to mention is about the website and trying to get the mail list going. And that, you know, when we're talking about different vendors coming in or conferences, I think that will really help in communicating information out to people. Because one of the problems when we've had some events or a vendor coming in is disseminating the information to people. And so no matter how many people you disseminate it to, there's some that didn't hear about it and that, you know, missed the opportunity. So we're working on that, and I think that will help.
Well, I'm waiting for the day when I'm not as confused about the website. I got a message from Kelly yesterday, and I need to apologize to the board because I evidently sent a couple of things or something through the old system rather than the new one, just like this week. I didn't know I did that. I mean, I don't quite get that system yet, I guess. I don't know if... I guess I'll just ask my question in front of God and everybody is, if we want to send a message through that system, do we need to actually go to the website to do it, or can that...
You just need to make sure it has the correct address. And I think what must have happened was you used the old address, which was board at NCBVI. So maybe that's in your address book or something. Yeah, Kelly.
I
was wondering, why am I getting help? Because what we had done originally was we set up, there was one email address called board at NCBVI, And that one was set up actually on Kelly's computer, and Kelly's computer was set to, whenever it received messages to that address, it would forward them on to the rest of the group. Well, there's a way to automate that process, and there's a machine that does all of that for us now, too, so that you don't actually even rely on anybody actually ever checking the messages.
And that's what we were looking for,
right.
Yeah, and that is what's in place, and I don't know what the address is. I could probably run upstairs and find out real quick if you want me to, but...
Well, she sent, in the message, she said that I needed to use such and such, you know, whatever that was. Now, if I put that in my address book in the same way that you would put an individual thing? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Is it like putting a folder in there instead of a file, or is
no,
it...
No, because you're still, you're really just putting one address in there.
Okay.
So, and that's the advantage to it. Instead of you having to have four or five or, you know, half dozen addresses for a group to send something to them, you're just sending it to one address, and the machine at Nebraska Online is taking care of distributing that to the whatever address is associated with that.
I think it would be helpful, Jonathan, when we're done with you on the hot seat, if you would go up, and then when you come back down, give it to us.
But Barbara's got to take the old address out.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I will, and I know how to do that.
And I think that's the only problem, that was in there by mistake.
Okay, and so if one of us changes an email address or whatever, then what happens?
For now, let Kelly know. I think she would be the contact person. What she would do is contact Nebraska Online to have them update that list. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's something right now if we can maintain ourselves or if we have to go through them, but that's sort of the same type of deal we're looking at for a distribution list for notifications and things that, you know, what we would do is when we have contact with the person, one of the pieces of information we would collect from them is their email address, and we would be able to then add them to this list that would, you know, anytime we post something to that address, it actually goes out to however many hundreds or thousands of people are subscribed to it. Mm-hmm. And there would also be an option set up so that people can subscribe themselves to it. So if it's somebody from Timbuktu that happens to come across our website that says, hey, this organization is interesting to me, I want to get on their mailing list, they can add themselves to their mailing list. And if, client John Doe down the street from our office no longer wants to be on the list, he can unsubscribe from the list also. So once the list is set up, it can somewhat be sort of self-maintaining, depending on whether the...
That's what I think is ideal.
And that's what we're working towards. And I know that Kelly has posed the question to them, and they've said yes, they can do it, and I think it's just a matter of getting the details worked out. And,
right. I know she's working on it.
So we don't have a timeline yet for when that...
Unfortunately, no.
No, and I don't know if the reason there's not a timeline is just because Kelly has not been able to get to that task, or because we're waiting on something for Nebraska Online. I'm not sure. So I can't really...
But we have worked out, I don't know exactly what she's planned yet, but that Kelly will have specific slots in her schedule that are to work on the website and anything related to that piece, so that because when the phone's always ringing and there's always counselors needing something done, it's hard to get to a project like that. And so I've asked her to set time and work it out with Nancy Floral, the supervisor, to have certain blocks of time, and that's what she'll do several times a week. So I think we should get better.
I think so. I mean, Kelly's done a good job, but the only problem has been that it's been difficult to figure out, I think for her, to figure out where in terms of priority does this task fall. And it's really not even a question of priority. It's, like you said, it's just a matter of having a block of time set aside that is dedicated time to work on this, you know. We all know that you might have something that's a very high priority, but if you don't somehow, you know, make a set time to work on that project, it's still going to wait till the last minute, so.
Yeah, and it is, it is an accessible website. It, you can actually find things on it, which I always consider to be a really good thing. You know, there are so many of them out there that, you know, novices like me have just a tremendous amount of trouble figuring out even where to begin. And I've actually been able to go to this one and and find things.
Yeah, Kelly's done a pretty good job of making sure that whatever she puts on there is in a format that works pretty well. I know that she has a screen reader on her computer, and when she updates a page, she'll check it and see how it reads, and if things need to be changed to make it more logical, she will. She's done a good job with it. I would say that, and this isn't just, I've had a couple people say that maybe it isn't as visually appealing as it could be. I mean, I think it looks okay, but so we'll probably work together a little bit on kind of some things to just sort of change the visual appearance of it a little more. Maybe make it look a little more consistent with what some of the other state agencies' websites look. Give it a little more consistent feel, but certainly making sure that it retains its readability is our top priority.
Jonathan, Kelly actually does quite a bit of training with consumers herself, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
And I'm glad that we are conscious of what its visual appeal is, because I do think that that's important. I want us not, though, to have that overshadow the readability thing of it, because and that can happen just with one little thing. My kids used to mess with screensaver kinds of things and stuff like that, and just drive jaws up the wall. And so whatever it is, if it can be in the auditory background or however you want to put that, that would be the way to go. You know, I'm glad that we consider that, though, because a lot of times people think, well, you know, blind people don't care about that kind of thing, and we do. You know, we want it to be up and coming and, you know, on par with whatever else is out there. But I sure do appreciate being able to read it without having to go to all kinds of going through hoops to do it. Does anybody have any other questions? Comments?
Yeah. So Pearl, is it in your intention then when you get the word back from Kansas City, if financial participation is available, to start looking at that as a component of buying some things or providing some?
Well, my question had to do real specifically with the part in rule that deals with academic support and requiring students or people who want to be students in colleges, etc., to go through the process of the financial aid that the institution's office does. They have a real specific process that they identify what the resources the person has and what the unmet need is. And what we've done so far is we've required a Pell Grant for everybody, because that's in the Rehab Act, but we have not required that they go through that more official process. And we've kind of, the counselor has had the responsibility of figuring out what the person needs. Well, you know, that's not our expertise, and I think that it takes a lot of time, and I'm sure we're not consistent about it. I think that we ought to require students to go through that and then look at that, what the institution, the college determines as unmet need. And then, of course, within that, also look at what other blindness-related issues there are that maybe the college didn't look at. And then determine what our program participation will be. So that's more to do with their tuition, fees, books, child care, transportation, maintenance issues that they have in college. I really was not thinking about it in terms of technology, but the answer would be parallel. If they say yes, you can, you know, you can do, I guess the difference is we would, if we did it for a part of technology services or procurement of technology goods, then we would need to, I mean, if we would have to implement the financial participation questionnaire on all clients in order to implement that piece, I think the answer would be no, because we've already addressed that. If they say yes, you could do it just for or on the people who want the technology services, then we'd have to come back to you all and discuss and decide, you know, whether this piece of it, whatever is legal, would really serve us, or if we'd end up with most people being over the or under the level anyway. So I don't know whether really it would work to do it, but I'm always willing to explore something.
How does a work study, because now when a kid goes through financial aid applications and stuff, one component is usually always some work study.
Right.
And I mean, that's, you know, it's forcing them to do something, but mm-hmm. for a blind person, it's probably good. I mean, get that work experience. So.
Absolutely. I think work experience while you're going through college is crucial. And those are the kids that are going to get jobs when they get out of college. But I don't know, you know, I mean, I would think, yes, that ought to be something that is looked at just the same as it is for any other college student.
Because if they're going to school, it presupposes that they ultimately want to find work, and
that's
just
right.
not a, just a,
one would hope.
You know, build their, you know, their mind, but mm-hmm. So that being the case, I mean, work study would mm-hmm. be.
I agree with that as far as, I think it should certainly be encouraged, and I think we ought to do it if we were to make it a requirement, though, we run into the same situation we run into with any kind of thing like that, and that is the 70% unemployment rate isn't
well, with the work study, though, you know, from the college, they come up with the work. I mean,
yeah, they do, but they're part of the whole society that keeps us down and out, and so what are they going to come up with?
But, see, that's where we could really help make a systems change there. And
I agree.
Could work with the university and figure out a work-study situation that would work for the person, and, you know, maybe we'd make some real changes there.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect kind of place to shoehorn our what we want to accomplish, getting people mm-hmm. work experience and getting institutions to, you know, work with blind people. And
right.
That, but it would just be part of, if you required them to go in and do the full financial aid application, that'd be, you know, I don't think that it's ever not a component. I mean, when they come up with, you know, Pell Grant of some work mm-hmm. studies, some, you know, grant or some loans, and it's just part of the package. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great idea, and I hope that we don't get a negative answer from Kansas City, because I think it mm-hmm. would be very helpful for people going through school to have to do some of that.
I think it's a great idea, too. And, you know, I hope what I said didn't make it sound like I don't. And I'm not as pessimistic overall as that comment may have sounded either. I do know, though, that there are times when you can spend your full time trying to get somebody convinced of doing a thing,
sure.
and it can get to the point where it would run counterproductive to a student's participating in classes, just trying to get that kind of a thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't want us to...
Well, I think it's something that needs to happen.
To
if we
that,
can't get
yeah.
universities to come up with a workable work study, then who, you know, then that's pretty, you know, that makes it, you know, who can we expect to work with us, and if we can't get universities through work study?
If we just left it to the client and the school, say, okay, if you, you know, if the school determines you need it, you guys figure it out, or we're not paying for your school, that would not be appropriate.
No.
But we can be active agents in it, and if the work study is a component of it, of that person's plan, or not IPE, but school situation, we would jump in there and we would, you know, help make sure something was developed that was a good work experience and met the needs for work study and you know, worked for the person.
And I do agree that there is no time like the present in anybody's life to come to terms with the fact that the world is the way it is.
That's true.
And students really do need to know that that is how it is, and that can become a part of their whole educational process. Mm-hmm. However the work mm-hmm. thing itself really pans out, just the experience of knowing that kind of thing that they hear about is real. Mm-hmm. Can be very instructive.
Well, it raises the whole point. I mean, if someone comes in for aid application, they're going to get it. The only people that aren't going to get it are people whose families are so wealthy that they're not going to, you know, give them hardly anything. So we're basically saying that if the only people that wouldn't have these other requirements are going to be the people that aren't, whose families aren't wealthy, because those are the only people that aren't going to get financial aid components made up of, you know, the grants and work study and loans and.
Right.
So I guess it's probably something we'll have to, you know, look at the whole area, because it opens up a lot of components. We don't want to make only the kids whose families aren't wealthy have to, you know, do the work study, which is.
Well, see, part of where I was going with what's written into this draft rule is the schools have been, you know, they have a system for analyzing and evaluating each mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. Whether it's perfect or not is another question, but that's their expertise of those financial aid officers. Our folks don't know how to do that, and actually the way it is now, we don't even, we pay schooling for people with a wealthy parent, you know, unless they specifically tell us I don't need that. But anybody who's going to school and the school is part of their IPE, we will pay their tuition. And I think that we're missing the boat on that. And also then our counselors, as I said, are in a situation of trying to do that whole piece of determining financial, of the need, you know, for the schooling. And that's not, they don't have the time nor the expertise to do that. So that's why I think this would definitely be a change if we go with this policy that's in the rule that I'm proposing. But I think it would be a real good one. And there still is, you know, there's still the option for us with our expertise on blindness to add some pieces to unmet need and say, you know, that actually the unmet need is larger because of blindness issues. So, you know, it doesn't just, and another example, the scenario I keep hearing is, well, what if the, you know, you've got millionaire parents, but they don't believe that there's any reason to educate their blind son or daughter. Well, then we'd say, sure, you know, we'll pay the tuition, we'll, you know, help that person to get away from that kind of environment if that's their goal. So it, even then, it allows for some exceptions.
Well, we've taken. Okay, we seem to be getting off the field a little bit, and we need to.
I appreciate your time,
Jonathan. Can I interrupt a minute? It's really stuffy in here. Can we turn on some air?
I don't think we found a way to do that. Is there, Robert, any way to?
I'm looking. I don't know.
Well, we appreciate your taking the time and informing us and dealing with our questions and so forth, Jonathan. And you know, we'll.
You're welcome.
And if you think of anything, you know our address better than we do.
We had a meeting in here 2 weeks ago.
The secret is under my seat.
Last week, and we kind of had the same problem. I know it's bad. The other thing we could do, since the room is not filled with public, is we could move this commissioner's table more toward the door, because I would imagine it's not as stuffy back there toward the door. Or we could flip it so we're sitting up there instead of back here. You know, that would be options.
Or Bill can just fan Dorothy.
Yes. I would like to request a little break and walk down the hall if we can do that. It's about 10:35.
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break if everybody's agreeable. And
I'll go get that address.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so do you want to move the table around, or do we move them forward? And we're going to try to move quickly through things. The next item on the agenda is my report, and I want to say again that I'm really pleased that we received the information about the Employee of the Year and the Supervisor of the Year, and I think that both Jonathan and Nancy do commendable work, and we're certainly glad to have them on board.
Now, they're from all state agencies, or?
No, from the commission.
Oh, the commission, okay.
And also, we received the information about Commissioner Wilson's appointment of chair and members for the 28th Institute on Rehabilitation Issues and the study groups, and it was good to find Carlos's name in that list on the group for investing in the transition of youth with disabilities to productive careers. So, congratulations to Carlos also.
Thank you.
There are several things that are kind of in process and several things that we've done in the last several months. I participated in the voting accessibility hearing on the 27th of August. We had received some information about that also, and we're hoping that they will really consider us when it comes to whatever the state decides to do with voting machines and that kind of thing. And also, there was a hearing before the part of the legislature, it was a study group on e-government, and I know that Nancy Kaufman had attended that, and then there have been some kind of follow-up things, and I'm really glad that the commission and I know that the National Federation of the Blind has been real involved in trying to make sure that these entities, when they do create websites or have things that are available to the public, that they are available to us as well. And of course, we'll continue to work on that. And then when it came to the budget situation, I spoke with several senators and aides and so forth about the budget cut situation. In a discussion with Senator Werbein, we talked about the fact that the legislature wants to be helpful to us in terms of making it so that we can, as Voc Rehab does, have full match in terms of the state funds that are available. And one of the things that I blatantly said to him was that one thing that would help us to get toward that and that would show a good faith effort on the part of the legislature would be if this budget wasn't cut, and that would not necessarily change those proportions this year for the better, but it wouldn't make them any worse either. There are a lot of other kinds of things that they were talking about too. When one of the aides was talking to me about how, well, there were 74 agencies that have some federal funding, or there are some 74 agencies, and of those, 34, I think she said, had some federal funding. And we talked about, though, what that really means. And what it means for a lot of them is that there may be one program here or there that has a federal match of some sort. It's usually like a 2-to-1, you know, something like that. And so we're really not talking about the same thing. And we need to make sure that we continue to let legislators know that this situation is different from what they're going to be dealing with in some cases. Different from any other agency within the state, and in some there may be one or two others that may have a similar kind of a thing, but they don't know that stuff unless we tell them, and so we need to continue. It looks like we have worked through another potentially sticky situation, but it's not over, and it never will be, and we need to continue to maintain vigilance, and so, you know, that's something that we can do. One of the messages that I sent through the wrong website address was the letter that we received from John Fullerton in response to the letter that we had written and sent to him with respect to the budget cuts. And what he said was, "Dear Ms. Walker, I am certainly disappointed in the decision by the NCBBI Board of Commissioners to cut funding to Radio Talking Book Services Incorporated by 40%. Losing $20,000 in yearly operating support will be a tremendous blow in our effort to provide print information to thousands of blind and visually disabled Nebraskans. I hope this decision might be reconsidered in the near future. Sincerely, John Fullerton, Executive Director. And that was sent on the 1st of October. It was dated the 1st of October. And so, you know, that's one of the things. I don't know for sure what else went there, but I have, I did send a message to Kelly and ask her to send whatever it was to everybody, even if it's after the fact. So you may get something when you get home that you ought to have had before the meeting, but hopefully it isn't anything real major. Let's see. There are some things that we will be talking about later on, so I'm not going to go over those at this point. We had talked at our last meeting about the change in the scale that we wanted to use for the executive director's evaluation. I did talk to Karen Billings on Tuesday, and what she said was that since we have the form in place and that sort of thing, that when we send in this next one, we can put a note on it that refers back to our conversation, that is hers and mine, that says that we have changed the form as per our conversation on the 13th of November, and that everything will be fine. And she said that if she discovered that something was different from that, she would let me know. I told her if it needed, you know, if we needed to generate a letter or something, we could certainly do that. I told her what we wanted to change it to, and that seemed fine. So as far as I know, there isn't any problem with that, and everything should be fine. So that has been done. We have received a lot of messages during this time, and we always try to make those part of the public record, and so, you know, that's something that we continue to do so that people know the kinds of things that we are receiving. I'm hoping that everybody is continuing to read what goes through, and sometimes I get the responses, the automatically generated ones, and sometimes I don't, and I don't know whether that's because, you know, people are answering no to that question. I would really appreciate it if you answer yes to it, if you have that on your computer where it allows you to do that. That way I know that things have gone through, and maybe if that, you know, were happening in a more,
Have you sent anything recently, besides this last address thing? Because I don't think I've gotten anything from you for a couple months at least.
Okay. Well, we may have a bigger problem than
that. Yeah, I haven't gotten anything for a lot. I was just wondering if you were still alive.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, all right. Well, that may be...
Maybe why you're not getting responses because we're not getting them.
Okay. Well,
let me ask. Did you all get things from me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll have that worked out, because that wouldn't be a good thing. Okay, I believe that's all that I needed to bring in this part of the meeting, and so if there aren't any questions of me besides are you still alive, so we don't know if we're getting stuff or not, we'll go on to the executive director's report for all.
Okay, thanks. First I'll start with the correct address for the commission board. It's all small letters, COMMISSION dash, not underscore, but dash, BOARD at NOL.com. And I would recommend if Barbara would send a test to that address.
Excuse me, what was that for board?
Pardon me?
After board.
After board is at NOL.
For Nebraska Online.
Okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
.com.
Yeah, I'll be glad to send it.
Now, but if you send stuff, anything to that, know that it's not going to go to Jan or me. So if you also want to include us
yeah,
in
and
something.
I've been doing that, you know. With,
okay.
That's probably why you guys have been getting
it. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then in talking about accessibility, I wanted to add that Bill Brown, our business manager, has been active with the NIS process. That is, it's a new Nebraska Information Systems, which will combine the current NAS, Nebraska Accounting System, and NIS, the Nebraska Employment Information System. In other words, the accounting and the HR whole infrastructure of computer technology that all state agencies use will become NIS someday soon. And so he is in there very verbal and making sure they know about the importance of accessibility for this system, making sure that it's not going to be another end focus fiasco. And I think doing a good job with that. And of course, pulling Jonathan in and informing him as well. But Bill's in more meetings that have to do with NIS, and so he's making sure that gets said all the time. And then another point on something you talked about, Barbara, the radio talking book. One thing that I noticed is that John Fullerton did not share the letter that you sent to him with his full board. He reported the decision. But, you know, your letter really addressed some things that full board should have heard. And I think for future reference, we should try to remember, we should send copies of any such letter to an entire board or whatever the situation is. You know, I tried to make points to them about the value of what our counselors do every day across the entire state with every single new applicant, which is telling them about radio talking book and library, you know, the talking book library and Newsline and whatever services are available.
Do you think we should send that to the board now?
I don't know whether it's, you know, whether it would make any difference at this point. I suppose what you could do is a follow-up to, since he wrote you a letter, a follow-up making all those same points. That would probably be good. And stressing that we support far more than the $30,000 that we give in cash money. And,
well,
you know,
I don't know. That seemed like beating a dead horse.
Well, that's why I hadn't thought that you should send the copy of the first thing.
Well, but no, if we could say it came to our attention that not everybody got it.
Okay.
Well, no.
Either way, I mean, I do. I.
What if
I
you posted can, it on the website? Would that?
No, that board wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I'm just telling you. I know they didn't get what you all said to them, except that we're not paying the same amount anymore. So, something to consider.
Do you have a list of the...
Sure.
I know Glennie on the board is up there. She just sees it. She's just furious that she keeps after your opt.
Mm-hmm.
Because she thinks he's a traitor that sold the whole RTB out. So,
mm-hmm.
So she should know that. And that would get the information to the board. She might through their anguish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very upset.
Oh, they are. They really
mm-hmm.
are. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I guess, I mean, it didn't occur to me that...
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think of it either.
That would happen.
Right.
Not a good thing.
It still wouldn't matter, but they should have got the information.
Mm-hmm. Right. They should have, but they did. They just got the decision. Okay. I will tell you a little bit about the services we're providing in terms of numbers and what we're doing. Did you all receive the numbers, the We set the VR and the IL statistics, so maybe I don't, especially since...
Yeah, we...
Okay, so you have those, and you also receive the center report that talked about the numbers of people, and the great thing about that is 71.72% of the people who've attended the training center in the past 5 years are employed, and 62% of the clients that finished the training are competitively employed. So that really is something we're proud of. And of course, attending the center is not just a good reflection on the center, it's of all the staff, because nobody gets to the center without work with a field counselor.